shootings by policemen or deaths by policemen are not reported. There is no national database that keeps track of people who have been killed by policemen.
I understand you've met with the family, and you've learned some things about him, and some things have come out. So who was Mr. Montes? He was an apple orchard worker, I believe.
Right. He was. He'd been in this area for 10 years. He came up here from Mexico. He worked in the orchard here and lived here full time. He was separated from his wife, and he has two daughters, and I believe the daughters are 15 and 12, they live in California. I believe they're in the Tri-Cities now or on their way up here. We're scheduled to meet with them tomorrow. His mother still lives in Mexico. She's coming up or may already be here, and then his extended family lives here in the Tri-Cities, and that's who really gave us a background on who he was. 35 years old. He'd only been out of jail for a little over a week. He'd been living in the homeless shelter, and in actually one of the videos that shows another angle of the shooting, you can hear people in the background saying they recognize that man and that there's something mentally wrong with that person. So it was known that he was having emotional or mental problems, but his family will tell you that a lot of that started after his arrest over a year ago when he's charged with assault police officers. They said he was never the same after that. You know, and to what degree the injuries he suffered during that arrest, you know, that's never discussed. There's no record to that.
That was Rick Rios, a member of Consejo Latino in Pasco, Washington, speaking with KBOO's Paul Roland. You've been listening to KBOO's PM News in Depth. Stay tuned now for Labor Radio. Good night, Roslyn.
Good night, Ken. Good night, Danielle.
Hi, this is Bob Junda from Disability Rights Oregon. Although the United Nations calls it torture, 80,000 prisoners across the United States are in solitary confinement. This includes pregnant women, youth, and people with mental illness locked in small windowless cells with no contact for up to 24 hours each day. Join us on Prison Pipeline as Disability Rights Oregon unveils proposed legislation to stop the use of solitary confinement in Oregon prisons for persons with serious mental illness. Tune in to Prison Pipeline on February 16th at 6:30 p.m.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening. The time is 6:04 p.m. You're listening to Labor Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Nick Bubb, and with me here tonight is... And... And... We got a lot of things to talk about tonight, you guys. We're going to talk about 15 now. Is $15 the right minimum wage for Oregon? And we're going to have an update on that. We got a few other things to talk about, like what happens when there's no work in Oregon? What's life on the road like? And we're going to talk a little bit about a third political party that's got a lot of money being funded to it. And it might be bad news for everyone in Oregon and America. But first of all, let's talk about 15 now. What's going on with 15 now, Tammy?
Well, we had some really exciting updates recently. So now there's actually a bill in the Senate and another bill in the House. And so the Senate bill is bill number 332, and the House bill is number 2009. And basically, the idea is to raise the minimum wage statewide over gradations in a 3-year period. So at first, it would be $11.50 an hour in 2016, $13.25 an hour in 2017, and finally, the magic number, $15 an hour in 2018.
That's great news. So what can people that are listening right now, what can we do to help get those bills pushed through?
Well, actually, coming up this week, on Wednesday, February 18th at 2 p.m. at City Hall, we're having a hearing. And people are going to be testifying about their working conditions and how hard it is to survive in Portland when you make less than $15 an hour. So we're basically trying to convince Mayor Hills that, you know, he's doing a great job in that, you know, raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour for full-time city workers is great, and that will help, you know, a fair number of people. So a $15 fair wage policy is going to affect over 100 janitors, security guards, parking attendants, concessions workers, and others who work for companies that contract with the city of Portland. But, you know, we really want to emphasize that we need to push this even further. And while this is a great first step, we also need to expand this so that all people who work for the city of Portland, whether they're temporary workers, whether they work part-time, all of them should be making $15 an hour. And that's really what we're going to be focusing on. And so the current proposal basically leaves out 2,000 casual parts department employees who work part-time on poverty wages.
See, the problem that I'm seeing with that right now is that, like, for example, the healthcare bill. If a person works full-time, which they define as 30 hours or more, then they have to get health coverage, which is great. But then you get places like Walmart that says, well, that's it. We're just not going to let anybody have 30 hours anymore. So if they were able to exclude the part-time workers, then that's how they'd be able to sneak by when really everybody needs at least $15 to be able to survive in Portland.
Right, and that's totally, you know, the crux of the situation is that, you know, in this country, you have so many workers who are unable to find full-time jobs no matter how hard they try. And so many people are working part-time and are severely underemployed. And in Oregon, you have 9 people looking for each job that's actually available. You know, these numbers are pretty disheartening. And the number of people who are working part-time means that, you know, they really have no way of getting by.
That's funny that you say that, because back when the economy was good, I applied for the fire department up in Tacoma, Washington, and they had, I believe they said 1,400 people that applied at the time that I applied, and they were taking 8 new firefighters. And they ended up not hiring any because the economy turned south, and they didn't end up having it in their budget to do that. But so, I mean, 9 for every job opening, I mean, that's tough as it is. But even that seems like a lowball estimate to me.
Right. Well, that, you know, these numbers are never completely hard and fast, in that, you know, the people who have given up looking for work are no longer counted, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like for unemployment, they don't count those guys anymore. Once you've exhausted your benefits and you're like, well, why am I going to waste my time filing my claim every week? Then, I mean, you're not counted as an unemployed person anymore. So $15 an hour, $15 now. Michael, you went down to the Capitol, didn't you?
I did indeed. Yeah, it was a couple of Saturdays ago. We had a big rally out in front of the state capitol on the steps there, and actually, it was maybe about a couple hundred people showed up, but it was a great turnout, and a lot of people, a lot of low-wage workers there speaking about, you know, the need for raising the minimum wage statewide, and particularly about lifting the statewide preemption so that local municipalities can do it on their own. And maybe Tammy can talk to us a little bit more about the rally, but from what I saw, I took a lot of great photos that day, and people were really jazzed about it.
Right. Well, you know, the great thing about the rally is that, you know, it got a bunch of people from all over Oregon, including the Portland area, over to Salem, a place where many of us, you know, that's where the magic happens, but a lot of us don't really hang out in Salem very often. And, you know, there were a ton of unions there, a ton of community groups, and it was a really diverse crowd. You know, there were some Walmart workers who talked about their experiences. Farm workers from the Farm Workers Union Picun also spoke. It was really a great time. And, yeah, we did get a lot of great photos, too.
And that's one of the things I've really noticed over the last year of being involved in the 15 Now movement in this city and in the state is that the number of unions that have signed on really in the last 6 months is staggering. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if, Tammy, maybe you have the numbers for that, but I mean, it's, yeah, you may not. I mean, there's so many unions, but union support is growing, and that's really what's going to push it over the edge in this state, I think.
You know, the interesting thing to me is a lot of people that I hear that are actually, or I think they're past it now, but at some point they're worried that $15 an hour minimum wage, who that would hurt, they thought was mom and pops, right? And somebody that just owns an individual shop, but it's not, because it's Walmart that wants to pay their people the bare minimum, and nobody, mom and pops can't compete with Walmart in that regards, because they make all their stuff in sweatshops, you know, maybe not all of it, but a lot of stuff. If you've seen the documentaries on Netflix, they're horrible, horrible conditions, and it's hard to compete on that. But so actually, if you raise the wage up, it actually helps to make it a more even playing field. It's good for mom and pops if everybody has to pay, including all their competitors, $15 an hour minimum wage.
Yeah, you increase the consumer base, and people will, you know, be more discerning consumers, and they'll go to local mom-and-pop shops as opposed to the Walmart or the Target.
Yeah, that's right. And when you make a little bit of money and you have a little bit of money to spend, that's what's good for the economy. If you've seen Robert Reich's film, Inequality for All, he's got the guy on there that makes linens, right? And he's like, it doesn't matter how rich you are. You only need one set of pillowcases, you know, maybe 10 sets if you got a mansion and you got 10 bedrooms in it, right? But somebody else, if they don't have the money to buy pillowcases, they're not buying pillowcases. And that's not good for the economy. You want everybody to have that money to spend. It's good for everyone involved. And everybody can have pillowcases.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and, you know, there's actually been evidence that this happened. So in San Jose, where the minimum wage was raised, small businesses totally benefited. And the minimum wage increased by $2 in 2013. And within a year, registered businesses in San Jose increased by 3%. And the registration of small retailers increased by 19%. So we actually have numbers that back up the idea that small businesses are the ones that will greatly benefit from raising the minimum wage.
So it's just a load of propaganda then that the enemy has, that people that they don't want to pay more, but when they do, it's good for everyone involved. How do we beat that propaganda? I mean, at Labor Radio, that's a great example. We can get the word out, but how else can we let people know that $15 minimum wage, $15 now, is good for everyone involved?
Well, you know, I think one thing to do is to attend the hearing that we're going to have downtown. I mean, if you go to City Hall on Wednesday, if we have a lot of people talking about their own personal experiences, the fact that, you know, $15 is, you know, really the bare minimum that people can live on. So all these reports that are saying that to afford rent in Portland, a couple needs to make a minimum of $15 an hour if they're working full time.
Yeah. And that's so, each, right?
Right, yeah. And that's each. So when you add, say, you know, if you have a single parent home and the single parent is working part time, then these numbers need to be even higher, really. And so, you know, that's the thing. Why should anybody who's working hard and trying to work a full time job and, you know, desperately trying to give their children a better life, why should these people be living in poverty? Nobody who's working hard should be living in poverty. And the idea that, you know, in Oregon you can work full-time and still not be able to afford to feed and clothe your children, and that you're on food stamps because of this. And that is another argument, too. That, you know, a lot of folks who are right now on public assistance, because even though they're working hard, their wages just are not high enough for them to get by. So, you know, you could also make the argument that, you know, once people have their wages bumped up and they're able to sustain themselves, they won't have to rely on taxpayer money anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, it's interesting that you say that, because on Facebook, I follow Bernie Sanders. He's got a lot of these same ideals, and he posted a picture, I guess it's a John Stewart quote. It says, if a businessman is smart and takes advantage of tax loopholes, people applaud him. But if somebody takes advantage of a program to feed themselves because they're hungry, they're considered a moocher.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it really is about changing the debate in terms of how to combat the negative propaganda out there. And instead of having it be about, well, you know, this is going to hurt small business, this is going to hurt, you know, my ability to create jobs, it really just has to be about, can we accept living in a country where we don't do anything about people working full-time and living in poverty? I mean, do we allow ourselves to live in that moral gray area that we currently are living in?
You know, and Tammy, you said there's a perception that nobody that works hard should have to live in poverty. And a lot of people accept that, but they don't think of people that work in a restaurant or people that work at Plaid Pantry as working hard. But I got to tell you, anybody that's been on jury duty, there's a lot of bad stuff that happens at a Plaid Pantry. Those workers are well-trained. They get robbed. They handle it. You know, that's really stressful. I mean, we're talking about some PTSD causing kind of stuff when you're robbed at gunpoint, and they deal with it. And
they come back the next day for work.
And they come back the next day for work, exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then people might say, well, they don't work hard. Those guys don't deserve $15 an hour. Those guys definitely do. You know, and they're the ones that most need to be able to afford their rent so they can live close to that job.
Yeah, I think anyone who says that a service employee doesn't deserve or isn't working hard, doesn't deserve a living wage, has never worked in the service industry.
That's right.
Just plain and simple.
Well, look, and, you know, the people who are working low-wage jobs are a very diverse group, and they don't fit the stereotype of the, like, sort of lazy work shirker, right? And they're not teenagers who are just working a low-wage job for extra spending money. In fact, 25% of low-wage workers are actually also parents. You know, a huge percentage of low-wage workers are also college-educated. You know, when we talk about the job market in this country right now, so many people are highly educated and come out of school with a huge amount of debt, mm-hmm. and then can't find a job that pays enough for them to pay back their loans. And so, you know, these are people who are trying to educate themselves, who are doing everything that American society tells them is the right thing to do. And instead of being rewarded for it, they're working while living in poverty.
Mm-hmm. You know what's crazy, though? I mean, as much as we're on board and there's a populist movement now for 15 now, there's an equal amount of opposition coming on, and it's being funded by a few number of really, really rich people. Namely, I read on Robert Reich's website that the Koch brothers announced that they're going to donate $900 million to fund political elections in 2016, and that's as much as the Democratic Party or the Republican Party spend entirely in a given presidential election.
And the Koch brothers are the within the top 10 richest people in the world.
I read that individually each of them has over $40 billion.
So we're talking like 0.01% of the wealth of the world, or of the wealthiest people in the world.
Yeah, it's unbelievable how much money they have, and it's never enough. And so the scary part is, I think everybody would agree now, in hindsight, that NAFTA was a bad deal for American workers. They call it free trade, but really what it is it allowed greedy corporations to send our jobs overseas so that they can pay people less and have less safe conditions. And now there's the Trans-Pacific Partnership that Barack Obama asked for a fast track on. Everyone listening right now, this is a bad deal for American people. What they want to do is they want to give companies the right to sue countries anytime they create a law that interferes with their profitability. They'll be able to sue the EPA if new environmental regulations cuts into their profit. They're going to be able to sue the Department of Labor if sweatshop conditions are banned, if child labor is banned and it cuts into their profits. They'll be able to sue for compensation, and that'll come out of the taxpayers' pockets. It's a bad deal, this Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Amen.
I'm telling you, I've heard about that thing. If you haven't heard of it, it's all being devised in secret. If you haven't heard of it, there's a group of lobbyists and the really rich people that are putting together this policy. It's going on in secret. And you need to call your legislator and tell them, no, you need to call your legislator and tell them, anything that's happening behind closed doors like that, it's not a good deal for the rest of us.
I wish the corporate muckety mucks were a little bit smarter and had a little bit more of a long ball game, and had a little more attention in the middle class and the poorer, the point where in the middle we can no longer afford to fund their billionaire drugs fund. And it's going to get to a tipping point that's going to be bad for everybody. If society collapses, their billions are going to be absolutely worthless. They don't have anything. They don't build anything. They don't make anything. If they were to reinvest money back into the population to make a more stable middle class, we would continue to spend money that we don't have, like we are now, and we would continue to fund their giant trust funds and continue to make them the richest people ever to have walked the planet. And they would keep being rich, only they would have, you know, six generations to look forward to of being wealthy, instead of pinching a penny now and toppling the economy in a generation or two.
That's right.
And that's essentially what happened post Great Depression in, you know, the 1930s. That Roosevelt went to the richest amongst us and said, "Look, you know, we are at the brink of a revolution. I mean, the trade unionists, the socialists, and the communists are organizing all of these unemployed people to essentially overthrow capitalism. You want to keep this going? Let's get a little bit of money into jobs programs. Let's put a little bit of money into rebuilding infrastructure in this country." And it worked. I mean, you want to take America back to what it was, you know, that's that right-wing quote. Well, what it was built on 91% tax rate on the richest people. I mean, that, you know, it's built on high tax rates and public jobs.
That's right. And what a lot of people don't understand, it's not their entire wealth that's taxed at 91%. They pay the same profit tax rate we do on the same money that they make at our level. It's only once they get above a threshold, like, say, over $1 million, everything they make in excess of that million would be taxed at 91%. And really, what does any human being need with more than $1 million in a year? I mean, I won't have that kind of money in 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, it's just saving for future generations. And if, like you were saying, if they can't guarantee that they're going to have future generations,
yeah,
because
what's the point?
Yeah, what's the point? Exactly.
That's
yeah.
Right. You know, and I'm glad that you said that, because I think that we do need to reinvest in the infrastructure in America, because that creates jobs, that makes us a more powerful nation. How many people would like to have an electromagnetic levitation train going from Canada to Mexico right down the I-5 corridor? You could live in Portland and work in Seattle, or vice versa, and your commute would only be a half an hour.
Well, let's go even more fundamental than that. How many roads and bridges need rebuilt? How many of those are on the verge of collapse? I mean, that definitely needs to be the next Manhattan Project. Government money poured into the infrastructure of this country to keep us commuting, to keep us rolling to and fro.
Absolutely.
That would make millions of jobs almost overnight.
Oh, yeah. And it's not just bridges on the verge of collapse. They've got bridges that are collapsing. Yeah. There's the one up in Washington and Mount Vernon, I think it was. Or thereabouts, that collapsed a year or so ago.
Yeah, I mean, the American Society of Engineers gave a grade rating to all of our infrastructure in this country. And yeah, we are right. Failing at infrastructure.
And we're the richest country that's ever been in the history of the world, and we're richer now than we've ever been. It just doesn't feel that way, because all of the money and all of the economic recovery has gone to the top 10%, and predominantly to the top 0.1%.
And stayed there. That's my point, is middle class people spend their money. They spend more than they make.
That's right.
The rich don't. All of the money that goes up to the top sits there.
Yeah. That's right. And then they put it and they invest it in stocks. And you know what they pay on that in taxes? They pay 15% if they do it right. We're talking about the difference between what we pay in taxes. They're actually paying a lower tax bracket, because the majority of their wealth comes from investments, not from their labor. You and I live with what we can do, with the amount of money that we can make with our time.
Yeah, they don't.
Yeah. I mean, that speaks to the need to have a higher corporate gain or a capital gains tax and death tax, as you call it.
The estate tax.
Yeah, there we go.
So if we had some more infrastructure projects going on, people would be able to work wherever they are, and not everybody can say that right now. Seth, you've just been out traveling around the country, haven't you?
Indeed I have, sir.
Where have you been recently?
I just got done with a month gig in Wyoming, and before that I was in Minnesota for about 6 weeks working night shift. But yeah, I go where the jobs are.
That's a tough kind of life, and you've got a family too, don't you?
I do indeed, yeah. A wife and two little girls at home, and I mean, they need to eat, so I got to go. I mean, that's just the size of it, so.
That's right, and it doesn't have to be that way. They could have jobs here in Oregon, and they will in time, but if they made infrastructure a priority, we could have it now.
Absolutely. And the skill rating for infrastructure jobs is across the board. You've got low-skilled people that can get jobs flagging traffic and, you know, doing other menial tasks, painting, you know, bridges. That doesn't all have to be skilled labor. There are plenty of jobs for skilled labor as well. But if you were talking about putting middle America back to work immediately, infrastructure is the way to go.
Yeah. Absolutely. And everybody among all incomes benefits from infrastructure.
Well, and you get something for your money. When you're done, you get a bridge. You don't, you know, you do routine maintenance on it for the next 50 years and it's still there. I mean, you know, it's not like you're just dumping money down a drain.
Right?
Yeah. And if you're trying to run a business, I mean, if you're shipping stuff across the country, you need highways, you need bridges that are working, you need rail infrastructure, you need, you know, all that stuff. Is you're not operating a business in a vacuum. You need the infrastructure to keep that going. So it should be in everyone's interest to reinvest in ourselves.
Absolutely. And Seth, you kind of have a good, you know, in a way that you're in a trade union and they're able to help you find work outside of our jurisdiction. There's a lot of people out there that aren't.
Don't have that resource, yeah.
And if they can't find work right here, how do they find work? I mean, I think everybody knows that there was a bunch of work in North Dakota, you know, but other than that, like, how do people really find jobs? If you're not in a trade union, if you don't have people that are helping you on your side, it's a scary place.
Well, not only that, but by the time you get to where you need to travel for work, a lot of times you don't have the finances to do so. I mean, if that was the case on my end a lot of the times.
Right.
It's hard to do.
That's true. I mean, I just got laid off myself, and I'm collecting on unemployment, you know, and if I didn't have that, I'd be in the same, I'd be, you Absolutely. Know, I'd be in a hard spot right now.
Yeah. Just to bring it back around, since we're running out of time, I was wondering if Tammy possibly has any idea as to which way the city councilors are leaning in terms of, you know, going into the hearing this week. I mean, obviously, you know, you may have no idea, but I may have put you on the spot there. I apologize.
Yeah, I mean, sorry. You know.
Well, way to go, Michael.
Well, I mean, so the fact that...
Where's your crystal ball? Tell us all about it.
The fact that Mayor Hills has already put forward, you know, this plan to raise the minimum wage to 15... you know, 15 has sort of become that magic number. And so once you have people kind of talking about 15, that's actually very exciting. You know, they're not saying, oh, we just need to raise the minimum wage to a living wage or something vague in that way. People are, you know, shying away from saying, oh, well, maybe there will be a better bill, you know, maybe, you know, a bill that, you know, wants to raise it to $12 or $13 will be better. So when, you know, the fact that Mayor Hales is already focused on 15 for at least full-time city employees, then I think that that is a huge step, the fact that we're there. So, you know, I'm very excited about the hearing. I think it'll be really powerful to hear a lot of people's personal stories.
What's the process left for this to become a law, state law? I mean, when's it up for a vote, or does it have to go through the House or Senate?
It has to go through the House and the Senate.
Okay.
So, you know, this is not going to be immediate, but we're looking at, you know, 2016 is going to be a huge year.
Okay.
Seth, the problem is that they've made it now that a city can't go and individually raise the minimum wage to 15.
There's a
statewide preemption that prevents it. The state has to do it. And that's what we were talking about with Senate Bill 332 and House Bill 2009. You got to call your legislator and let them know that you support a $15 minimum wage. And also, if you are going to call and talk to them, let them know that everybody deserves some paid sick time. It's just heartbreaking to know that somebody has to go to work when they're sick or their little kid is sick, and they got to make a decision between being able to pay the rent or being able to take care of themselves or their children.
Well, and again, this speaks to corporate common sense, corporate intelligence. You know how many billions of dollars are lost from sick time, people going to work? We don't have sick days. Let's go to work. And we make everybody else sick. And then they're losing weeks and months of man hours because they don't do sick time.
That's right.
So, I mean, it's in their own interest, again, to have this, you know, if I don't want to go, I don't want to go to work when I'm sick. But I don't have sick days, so guess what? I go, and I'm coughing all over people, and they're complaining about it. And you know what? Hey, I've told people, sorry, it's too bad. I don't get sick days.
That's right. Well, I guess that's just about all the time that we have for tonight. Tammy and Seth, thanks for coming down.
No problem. Thank you.
Michael, as always, I'm glad that you're here with me.
Thank you for having me, as always.
And for everyone out there that's listening, thanks for listening, and keep up the battle. We're gonna fight to make Oregon a better place to work and live.
Amen.
Yeah.
Have a good night.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone.